All right, this is the Wintrust Business Lunch. This is John Hanson. It is 12:09. I'm in for John Williams. And might I say one of my favorite things, I listen to WGN all day, every day, but when Steve Alexander says, "All right, here we go," it's like one of my favorite things, Steve. I just wanted to say that. I look forward to it every day, and when I get to fill in for John, it's like an added joy to get to hear you say that.
You're easily entertained, but thank you.
The little things, Steve Alexander. Appreciate that, as always. All right, let's get right to Stephen Esposito, Executive Director, Wealth Advisor, Senior Portfolio Management Director at Morgan Stanley in Lake Forest. Stephen, happy Friday. Wait, did Lake Forest get a bunch of snow this morning?
Not really. I didn't see anything.
All right, well.
I'm holding my breath.
Yeah, lucky you. Hey, let's talk through what we got today, the key Fed inflation gauge. What is this report, and how did it match expectations? What are we looking at here?
Well, they were looking for 4.9. I think it came to 4.9. It was a little bit better than expected on the numbers. You know, inflation is obviously the headline right now because it's I'm not going to say out of control.
Right.
But unique circumstances cause this to happen. I personally believe that supply chain plays a major role in what you're seeing right now. And, of course, the labor shortage, all that's combined. At some point, both of those will hit the equilibrium. They will catch up. And I think inflation may then come down pretty hard when that happens. So I'm not worried about inflation long term. Near term, it's affecting the markets dramatically. And the concern is that rates will skyrocket as a result of inflation. I just don't see that happening.
Yeah,
I really don't.
Yeah, I think that always historical perspective is important. And look, if you're pinching pennies, I get it, right? Like 6.5%, 7% more at your grocery bill each month or each week, that adds up. I'm not trying to discount that. Gas prices, energy prices, all that makes sense. But I do appreciate like the historical perspective. I saw a chart the other day because people often compare this to the 70s and into early 80s. Boy, oh boy, inflation was at double digits for like 6 out of 7 years, and that other year was like 9.8%. These are different eras we're talking about.
Well, very different. I was here in the 80s. I was an advisor. I started in 1983, so I've been doing this a long time.
Right.
And I remember that. I remember 12% tax-free AAA-rated municipal bonds, and nobody wanted them because they believed inflation was going to be at 20-something percent.
Mm.
So it's all about the perception. And I was told you'd never see a mortgage rate below 6% ever in my lifetime again. And now look where we're at.
Yeah,
so
right.
Everything goes to extremes more now than ever, and the machines do play a role in this, in the bond and stock markets. Don't kid yourself. But I do think the Fed will raise rates and slowly, hopefully slowly, gradually, based on the data. But we're hearing projections out there from Wall Street, 5, 6, 7, 8 rates. I don't see that happening. It'd have to be an amazingly strong economy for that to happen. But inflation's a problem, no question. But I don't think it's here to stay. I think it will find its middle point when things start to come back to normal.
Yeah, I have see a note in here about the spread between the 2-year and the 10-year. We don't want that to narrow any further. We want that to widen. This is like one of those opportunities for me to ask you, what do you mean by that? Explain to the layman what you mean about those yields and why that matters.
Well, the 2-year yield right now is around 1.25, 1.2. That's a 2-year treasury. And then if you look at the 10-year, you're looking at that around 1.8. So the spread is maybe 60 basis points. You'd like to see that wider, a more upward sloping curve on the interest rates. You don't want to see the 10-year yielding the same as the 2-year. That's a flat yield curve and signals recession. So the Fed's got to walk carefully, tread carefully in that situation and try to balance it. And that's one of the reasons you're seeing so much volatility in the market, because that spread has narrowed dramatically as opposed to it was just a week or two ago. So that is something you don't want. You want an upward, reasonably upwards steepening yield curve. And so that's something to closely to watch at, really on a short-term basis that will affect the computers and the machines with the marketplace.
I'm sure most people know exactly what you're talking about. It makes sense to me for the most part. I just want to make sure, and when I start hosting Your Money Matters next Monday, Monday after the next one, I just want to make sure. So when we say a 2-year treasury yield, that's what we would anticipate to make off the federal government on their borrowing, and a 10-year is the same. So the wider those are would show more sustained growth over time, correct?
Well, correct. You don't want the short rates to equal the long rates. It's just not a good thing.
Okay.
The markets don't like that. The lending area does, and the financials don't like that because they need an upward sloping yield curve to make money.
If there's one thing I don't like, and I don't think anyone does, it's the roller coaster up, down, and dramatic swings. And I don't like them, no one does, generally over a week's time, let alone within a trading session. And this week, there's been days we started in the tank, we ended up astronomically high, then the exact opposite. Is this just a natural collaboration, correction that we're just trying to, it may be a bumpy ride, but we're getting down to a point where it's not going to be some sort of bottom falling out, in your opinion?
Sadly, I don't think any of it's natural. I do think the machines play a very large role in what's happening. Plus, the average trader slash investor is now believes long term is lunch. Nobody's looking at the long term scenario when they're investing. And for a while now, the last 2 years, people have not paid attention to earnings. They're buying innovation at any price, paying any valuation for any company. And many of the stay home stocks got a lot of sales pulled forward. Everybody focused all their money in that area, drove those things up. And now you're seeing a long overdue correction in that area, a recalibration of what you're paying for a dollar in earnings. But I think that's good. I think that's healthy for the market. It creates more sanity from my perspective as to what you're paying for a company. And if we go back to that, I think that bodes very well for the markets going forward, at least the broad market, because we do have two markets. We have the markets with a handful of names that really dominate, and that's another issue. So I think we're going to go back to old-fashioned picking, investing in stocks, because the pain has been so great in many of these companies that never turned a profit and probably never will,
right,
that maybe investors are going to recalibrate how they think about investing. And I hope that's a situation that will make it a lot less volatile, I hope, for us all.
Learning from our mistakes. Boy, Stephen, you are hoping for a lot there. No, you're absolutely right. Stephen, we got to take a quick break, but stay in line. Of course, Stephen Esposito, Executive Director, Wealth Advisor, Senior Portfolio Management Director. You go to morganstanley.com. I'm John Hanson. I'm in for John Williams, and we're chatting with Stephen Esposito, the Executive Director, Wealth Advisor, Senior Portfolio Management Director for Morgan Stanley in Lake Forest. Find more at morganstanley.com. Stephen, carrying on about the point that we were talking about the market volatility, I just want to put this in terms that me and other people understand. Would it be your advice here that if you are someone that, you know, you have your six-month emergency fund, you play in the stock market to, you know, try and make a little bit instead of just having more in a savings account, and you don't have any major purchases coming up, and you got, you know, at least 5-10 years before you're going to retire, this isn't a time to be diving out and being scared and running under the bed, is it?
Actually, you know, the word play is really symptomatic of what's going on. People are, unfortunately, too many are viewing the market as a casino or playing. It's an investment forum from which, if you invest and take it seriously, you can earn a good rate of return over a period of years. This volatility is created because people are looking at it from that perspective, tack on the machines, which make it feel like that. And that's what happens. I mean, that's what disturbs me in terms of the integrity of the financial markets going forward. But I give you an example. This is one of the worst periods since March of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that significant? That was the bottom during COVID. That's when it all started and the market really crashed, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
And now look at the bargains. If you've been buying at that period of time, because we didn't know about a vaccine, we didn't know anything about this and what it was going to do. We shut down the economy for the first time in history, the world, and then reopened it within months of that happening. So imagine if this has had the worst market with a much better economic environment today and a vaccine and the talk that many of the countries in the world are going to reopen come Q2.
Right.
It's a different world, but yet the pricing's the same. So I view that as even bigger bargains now because we don't have as much uncertainty going forward as we had then in terms of the virus and now those other geopolitical things, et cetera. So I always view crisis as an opportunity to buy. I've lived through 5 stock market crashes in my career, and I'm still here.
Right.
So I'm still standing. I'm looking throughout this market for companies that will benefit from the reopening of the world economies. Think of where we're going to be in April, Q2, Q3, and maybe Q4, barring anything new. Look at those companies that will do well, and look what you're paying for earnings, book value, sales, and then put your portfolios together and get a dividend where you can.
Yeah, absolutely. I love when those dividends come in. It's always a nice little, hey, look, forgot about that. That's really nice. As you can tell, I'm not as serious of an investor as you are. But, you know, I'm more of an ETF guy and just kind of play. I'm like, you mentioned casinos. I don't like craps. I like roulette, spreading 10 numbers and getting to play for a long time. That's my game.
That's diversification in a really crude way.
Exactly. Yeah, splitting 27 and 30. That's really how you do it. Hey, let's talk about those rate hikes. You mentioned that you don't see these big jumps. Okay, let's say we do get incremental 3-4 rate hikes this year. I don't know, 5 maybe. What does that mean to the bottom line to everyday folks?
Well, I'm hoping that will be data dependent. So the stronger the economy gets or potentially inflation. Again, I don't think raising rates is going to really affect inflation as much as people think. I've seen it. I would be more measured in what it does. But right now, of course, it means rates will go up and you're going to see mortgage rates go a little bit higher in general. But I don't think if you look at where, once again, where we were 5 years ago. You know, when the dot-com bubble burst in 2000, investors could have put their money in a 5 or 6% CD and took their bat and ball and went home and didn't play anymore
there
in the financial market.
There were 5 and 6% CDs in 2000?
You believe that in your lifetime? I remember, again, 18% CDs in the 1980s. So it's all relative as to people's perception. But when you see that scenario and where interest rates go up, it's not that big of a deal. A rise in a mortgage rate of 0.5% shouldn't make, in terms of total dollars, that big of a deal in what you're buying. But again, it does affect people.
Right.
And it made them hold off on buying. But I think the bigger problem, as I said at the beginning, is the supply chain and the labor disruptions are what's causing prices to go up, I believe, more than anything. And when that comes back in equilibrium, you'll see it. They're even talking about the chips where people are double ordering, and now there actually might be a glut down the road of chips when everything starts to catch up because they double ordered.
Oh, man.
And so that'll be interesting. But everything is just such extreme volatility that it's hard for the average person just to get a handle on it. And I manage portfolios all day for clients. And I can tell you, it's very volatile. But you got to stick to your guns, diversify, and know if you have companies with profits and cash and sales, you'll be fine. It's those investors that I'm afraid of that are going to go and invest in innovation ideas and don't realize the level of speculation they're taking in their retirement plans. And that's the part that disturbs me. That scares me.
Yeah. I was reading the other day about that dot-com bubble burst. I didn't quite realize, I was younger at the time, that the NASDAQ lost 67% of its value. I mean, that's a gigantic drop. That's insane. Not saying that that's going to happen now, but you're right. I mean, it's obviously a little more speculative. I wanted to add some context to the Fed hike, and I was reading this great article on CNN.com, I think from CNN Business, that if there were 5 rate hikes, you would be looking at 1.375%, like if there were low rates. Put that in context. I mean, even as recently as 2018, we had rates at 2.4%. So while they're going to go up, this isn't some drastic dynamic change in overall perception of rates, right?
Right. Well, the cost of money will go up. That affects the average person. I agree. And you're right. I don't think it in the sense that as an investor going forward, looking to retire in 10 years or earn an income, having that rate is not going to change your life in the sense that it'll make it a better alternative than other investments. If you can go out there and put a portfolio together, again, of companies trading at reasonable valuations who will benefit from the reopening and assuming that occurs, are paying you maybe 1, 2, 3, 4% dividend, that to me is more attractive for the investor looking out long-term than buying a 10-year treasury. In fact, I wouldn't buy any bonds right now because I think rates are going to, we know they're going to go up, and that's not good for bonds. The longer the bond, the value of the bond will go down as rates go up. So I don't think bonds should be a component in your portfolio. I would rather have you buying more conservative type stocks with dividends, as I said, to make up for the loss of interest income. And look at it long term, and you'll be fine. Because I don't think that's competition. So it's a good point. Is it really going to change your life if the rate goes from 1 to 1.5?
Right.
Are you going to retire now?
Yeah.
I don't think that's the case.
Right.
I just don't.
Yeah. It just, you know, we've been told for so long, Tina, Tina, Tina. There is no alternative. And I think that is, you know, that made sense, right? Especially when you see inflation at 7%. If you've got your, you know, 6-month emergency fund, you don't need a bunch of other money sitting in cash making nothing. And that's why I think what has rattled me a little bit this week, like I still want to earn money on the money that I have a little bit extra. I'm not making tons. I'm just talking about the little extra money I have. But it scares me when you see these markets go down. But again, I think it's a matter of holding on and knowing that even if you're going to lose a little bit in the near term, form a little volatility, that the 3 to 5 year range is really what we need to be looking at here, especially if it's not money you need right now.
Right. And, you know, it's about two things. It's about balance, having balance in your portfolio. Everybody's uniquely different and should have a tailored portfolio to you. And I think that's important. All right. From that standpoint. So you have to look at it from that side. And I have a favorite saying that when the tide goes out, all the boats go down. When the tide comes back in, it's the boats without holes that go back up again.
Hmm.
And so when I put when you have a portfolio and you have companies are earning a profit and have a good balance sheet, they're not debt ridden, those are more likely to come back up again as long as you're not overpaying 30, 40, 50, or infinite number of times earnings or times book value, that I think you have more sustainability in a bad market that will come back as opposed to the other. I'll give you an example real quick.
Mm-hmm.
If you went January of 2020, the market was crashing. Everybody said, you know, I'm not recommending any of these stocks or not recommending. I'm just giving you an example for history's sake. If you bought Amazon In January 2020, you paid $1,900. It hit a high of, what, $2,800? Not a high, but right now it's $2,800. Mm-hmm. That's a good rate of return.
Right.
But had you went and bought a Ford Motor or any of these other companies that were economically sensitive, they were closing the doors, in that same time paid, you made a bigger percentage rate of return.
Right.
I said, whoa, what do you mean? And I said, yeah, go look at a Ford Motor where it was in January 2020, where it is today, and the percentage gain versus the gain you would have made in, let's say, a Facebook or an Amazon. You actually would have made more money in a company like that, or a Range Rover Jaguar, which is Tata Motors. Look at the difference. So, and go back 5 years. I'm going to have information next week for you showing the difference if you would have bought some of these 5 years ago versus the last 2 years.
For sure.
The perception is everything.
When you absolutely. Yeah. When you talk about anticipating the economies of the world opening up, we got less than a minute left, but I feel like, you know, I got some airline stuff as well, and that has just been nothing, and it's just been sitting there. But I keep it because I just have this hope that you have that QT, Q3, 2, and 3 might be a little bit better. Do you think that there's just some volatility even in that world because we've heard this before and it hasn't happened yet?
Well, I think you're correct. There's massive demand, pent-up demand to go on vacation, to go to hotels. And the people are doing it now. But the recent fourth quarter that was disappointing, Omicron, what caused everything to shut down. I know we canceled our New Year's reservations.
Right, same here.
As a result of it. So, of course, you're not going to have a great Q4. Why is everybody surprised with that, or even Q1? Why is that shocking the system or the markets? It shouldn't. Everything is being pushed forward. I tried to buy a pair of shoes. They told me to cancel my order until I'll get them in 90 days.
You need to go to where I shop for shoes. They aren't very expensive. They're all on the shelf. There you go, Stephen. Hey, we could keep on talking with us for a while. I look forward to hearing you next week with John. Thanks for joining us, Stephen. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, Stephen Esposito, Executive Director, Wealth Advisor, Senior Portfolio Management Director, Morgan Stanley in Lake Forest. A little bit of my therapist there. Go to morganstanley.com. 720 WGN. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Hey, everyone. 1235. It's John Hanson in for John Williams. I'll take you to 1 o'clock with the Wintrust Business Lunch. And then just like John does, we'll take you to 2 o'clock, right up to Lisa Dent in the next hour. And always love chatting with Michael Edwards. He is the president and CEO of the Chicago Loop Alliance. LoopChicago.com is where you can find more information about everything that we're about to talk about, including what's happening in the Loop. How are more people coming to the Loop? Are they? Are they staying in the Loop? What's happening downtown? And Michael Edwards, thanks for coming on today.
Well, thanks for having me, John. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's interesting to track. I think it gives us, I think we all have like anecdotal evidence in our head when we drive through the area of, oh, this is less people, or boy, it's super crowded again. It's nice to have some actual data, isn't it?
Yes, and we've been doing this since July when the pandemic started, and it just gives us a nice narrative as to what's actually happening out on the street across a number of different data points.
Sure, and it certainly gives people the information, government officials, other business, whatever, they can take that data and then target strategies, because obviously we want a vibrant downtown, we want businesses to succeed, we want people to enjoy the hotel. So let's talk first about pedestrian activity. What did we see last month?
Right. So the report that we just issued last week is for December. So this is a little bit before the Omicron variant, you know, really sort of took hold. So we're very pleased with the numbers that we had in December, largely around the holiday hustle and bustle and shopping activities, as you might imagine. So our pedestrian counts on State Street were nearly 65% of our 2019, which is sort of our base year pre-pandemic. And that's, you know, pretty high and pretty mm-hmm. consistent throughout the entire month, which is great. And, you know, the things that everybody, all of your listeners would be familiar with, Chris Kindle Market, you know, traditional holiday activities, the Macy's windows, et cetera, really led to that kind of traffic.
You know, I did a series of videos for World Business Chicago and WGN mm-hmm. Radio. So, Michael, you're welcome. That's what it was.
Thank you, John.
Yeah, no problem.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, anything I can do to help people out. No, yeah. I was looking at the parade, and that was, I think that was still the end of November, technically, but boy, it was crowded, and everyone was participating safely. But the skeptics out there will say, yeah, but nobody's working downtown. What are you looking at for that?
Well, from an office perspective, we were at about 38%. Our number is a little bit broader than just the Loop.
Let me stop you. 38% of where we were in 2019.
38% of our 2019
okay,
levels.
You
know,
thank
sort
you.
Of a typical pre-pandemic. And that may be a little high, but we don't have a really, really good number for specific to the Loop. So It's probably a few points lower than that, but still way better than it's been, you know, in the past, and continues to trend, you know, in an agonizingly slow rate upwards. I think people are finding, you know, real value in, you know, maybe better technology, a quieter work environment, you know, the kids in and out of school. The first part of the school year, you know, it's been difficult for people to get downtown, but they're trying, and we appreciate that.
Michael, I don't want to put you on the spot. You can say, I don't know, and just let us know later. What was the, what was the valley? What was the low point for office occupancy during the pandemic? If it's at 30, go ahead.
It was down in like 7%.
Oh boy.
It was way down.
I guess that makes sense.
The building's a little bit different, you know, companies that are in, but all the companies were planning on coming back by January 1. I think the current variant has made that a little bit less likely. But December was pretty good from an office perspective.
Do you have any idea how that compares with other cities?
It is better than some. And, I think we're better than New York and San Francisco, but not as good as Washington, D.C., for example. So we're kind of in the middle of the pack with regards to office.
Okay. One thing I noticed, especially over the last few months, was that it was hard to find parking again, right? I think that, like, I was like, I know occupancy is down, but I guess more people aren't taking public transportation. Everyone, you know, generally speaking, who's coming downtown is parking. What do we see in December?
So parking, you're right. So parking was, from a parking deck perspective, you know, it's kind of like it's been trending in a positive way. A lot of the parking services that you can get to bring your car down and be parked, you know, were up. And, you know, up to the 100% of the 2019 level, mm-hmm. again, our base year. And the public transportation ridership continues to increase. And CTA was at 50%. And, you know, kind of more related to office, the even Metro was up to 27% of the 2019 level, which is way better than the like 5% they were at, you know, at the height of the pandemic.
Well, then hold on. I cannot square this circle. If more people are working downtown, not more than 2019, let's say 38, 39, 40%.
Yep.
And we're
correct.
Starting to see an increase in CTA. And where are all these drivers coming from to have parking over 100%?
Right. I'm really glad you asked that, because it's something that we as our organization have sort of discovered. I don't know if you came down to see Frozen or came down to see a Broadway show or went to the symphony over the holiday, but the theaters are leading us back.
Mm.
And, you know, through the fall and certainly into December, downtown was busy in the evening, one, because of the theaters. So on a given weekend, you know, there might be 9 different venues open with multiple showings. There might be 50,000 people downtown, John, mm-hmm. just going to the theater. Right? Maybe it's a little afternoon, maybe it's mostly in the evening, which is great for downtown. Also, all of the universities are back. There's 58,000 students just in the loop. They're all back at almost 100%.
Wow.
And so you're seeing a lot of people walking around, which are largely students. And then finally, the residential redevelopment in downtown has really taken hold. A lot of people are moving back in, put off their relocation decisions during the pandemic. And so sales and apartments and way past the 2019 level.
Right.
So there's a lot of people living downtown. So you're seeing a lot of people, not as office workers like we're used to, but doing all of these other things because you can only do those in the loop.
Michael Edwards squared the circle for me. I love that. By the way, in the parking situation, I wonder if they're counting the red Ford that is literally disintegrating in the parking lot that I park in every day. For the last 4 years, it has just slowly fallen apart. It's like a museum artifact at this point.
Oh, really?
People have written, I do not know why this garage will not tow this car. The license plate just fell off this past week. I need to take a picture every day and post it on Twitter when I come into WGN about this thing. Because someone has abandoned this vehicle and it is just taking up a spot. All four tires are flat. I swear to God. If someone wanted to study how a car disintegrates over time, they just need to come to the garage. Anyways, I've gone off on a loop here. Really quickly, hotel occupancies. How are we looking there?
Yeah, hotel occupancy was the best it's been since the pandemic at about 64%. And again, that's a lot of people coming down for maybe a show, staying overnight, or visitors from out of town. Not a lot of business travel, more than before. But mostly visitors, probably around the holiday and some of the great events that the city puts on. So the holiday, that, of course, has dropped like a rock
yes.
going into January, which it usually does,
right.
but even more so with the variant.
do a staycation. We did that last September. It was really nice. Never stayed in a hotel downtown. Yeah. We don't live that far away, but the rates were good. Stayed in a hotel, treated ourselves to a night out. It was
good.
It was a lot of fun. I recommend that to people. Hey, Michael, thanks for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Michael Edwards, President and CEO of the Chicago Loop Alliance, loopchicago.com. More business news. Here's the Wintrust Business Minute with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Caterpillar outran increasing raw materials costs by raising prices in the fourth quarter. The company reported earnings today and says sales climbed 23%, topping Wall Street expectations. Construction industry sales rose 27%. The producer of construction and mining equipment reported adjusted earnings of $2.69 a share. Caterpillar says it worked with suppliers to alleviate bottlenecks, which helped the bottom line as well. The company expects very strong overall demand to continue through 2022. Lollapalooza appears to have had a bigger economic impact on Chicago than expected last year. The music festival returned in 2021 after being canceled in 2020 because of the pandemic and had a $305 million impact on the local economy. Cranes reports that's an increase of about 25% compared to $248 million in 2019. The stats come from a study commissioned by Lolla producers C3 Presents. Last year's event had 405,000 attendees, hired 17,000 staffers, paid $7.8 million in rent to the Chicago Park District, and generated $4.9 million in entertainment taxes for the city. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
It's time for the business food. Here's Steve Alexander.
I have to admit, confess actually, I'm a little hungover from yesterday's National Chocolate Cake Day.
Okay.
Actually, John, yeah, go ahead.
I say that was quite a pregnant pause you took there after hungover. It made me question you a little bit. What were you going to ask me?
Well, actually, I'm still celebrating, and helping me out today is
Tony Reakin, better known as the Average Guy Gourmet on YouTube, Facebook, everything like that.
And Tony's AverageGuyGourmet.com website features Portillo's chocolate cake recipe. Well, to be precise, it's a knockoff. Tony hacked the recipe and had some significant insider information.
I actually had an ex-Portillo's manager kick in and say, hey, Tony, you had done this wrong, so we tweaked it towards what she told me, and I got a pretty great copycat of it.
So the key to the recipe, and by the way, it is posted at WGNradio.com. Search for the business of food. The key to the recipe?
1 cup of mayonnaise.
Mayonnaise, Tony?
Yeah, but the big thing to remember, when you make homemade mayonnaise, it's basically whipped egg and oil, something you're already putting in the cake. You're whipping it before it goes into the cake, which ends up making a much more moist cake. It comes out so much better.
And a surprise ingredient?
There's a little bit of instant coffee in there. There's not a lot. You're not going to pick up a big coffee flavor. It just adds that hint to balance out the sweetness.
So it's pretty good, huh?
Oh my God. To me, it's dead on. Almost nobody I know can tell the difference. They love it.
Tony has a lot of other recipes and he does demo videos on YouTube.
And also I do exclusives on Facebook. Right now I'm running 50 breakfast recipes that don't appear on YouTube.
Tony's most popular recipe so far is part of his heritage.
My biggest by far is my Puerto Rican rice, arroz con gandules.
And if the name Tony Reakin rings a bell, you must be quite the pro wrestling fan. He was in the ring 15 years before becoming Average Guy Gourmet.
Cooking was a natural step because my dad was a cook and he liked to show me things in the kitchen. So I kind of just picked up and ran with what he did and just started a YouTube channel.
The Average Guy Gourmet. From the farm to your belly, it is National Blueberry Pancake Day. And tomorrow, it is National Seed Swap Day. Mr. Fizz, Jim Fizzell, will be here Monday to tell us all about that. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
And boy, I picked the wrong day. First, we have Portillo's to talk about, the cake recipe. Now we're pivoting over to donuts, and I haven't eaten yet today, and it's really going to be a problem. Rich Labriola, I know you can't help me with that in the immediate, but I guess I could walk over to a grocery store and grab some of your product. That's been huge for you guys, right?
Yes, it surely has. We started that during COVID because we were, you know, some of the stores were slow, a couple were closed for a few weeks, and so we figured out, you know, what's the next step of our business.
You had to use the word of 2020, pivot, and you did it.
Yes.
I think we're all sick of hearing that word, but I know local businesses and small businesses, mediums, all businesses have had to adjust to it. 8 years old, you guys have been in Chicago selling packs of the donuts now at Mariano's. Is that the exclusive location to find those donuts at right now?
It is in some other retailers.
Okay.
Also.
All right, good.
Besides Mariano's was the first one to really take it and run, though.
So do you have to do anything different in the recipe? Like, because I know obviously you buy it in the store. I know for the most part, hey, it was made that morning. They're fresh. They look fresh. You know, there's shipping involved. They sit on the store shelves. How does that work? Have you had to change anything?
It's a change. We change a little bit. What we do is we enrobe it in chocolate, which naturally keeps the shelf life a little bit longer. And we add some natural enzymes to keep it soft a little bit longer.
I do that to all my leftovers. Just enrobe it in chocolate just to make sure that it lasts just a little bit longer. How much of your business is this now?
Right now it's probably about 10 to 15%, but we see it as a really good growth pattern for us in the future as far as, you know, getting our brand and our products, you know, across the country. Right now we're just regional with it.
When you guys originally were opening, was your goal to have brick and mortars not only all across Chicago but everywhere else? Has that rethought maybe? Maybe we don't need these brick and mortars. We can do good business, save a lot of money on the overhead if we just distribute to grocery stores.
No, we're still committed to the brick and mortars. I mean, I'm still a believer that people will eventually want to go back and sit down in the store with their donuts. So although we are going with drive-throughs, our store footprint is still the same size. You know, we want people to come in, feel comfortable to sit and enjoy their donut, coffee, breakfast sandwich. So we still want to keep doing that.
How do you connect the dots between someone maybe picking up the box because it's nice, bright, and pink, but you want them to know where it came from, right? Not only that the store is there, but that, hey, we are a Chicago store. How do you kind of connect the dots there to remind people that, hey, you got these here, but you can come visit us at the brick and mortar, or is that not a concern for you?
We have our story on the back and how I started with Sam Berman 8 years ago in our original location on Damon. And, you know, thankfully, the brand is so recognizable in Chicago now, so we're appreciative that people, you know, see the brand and immediately recognize the pink box and, you know, correlate that with having been to our store or wanting to go after they have the donuts.
I was actually kind of shocked when I read that you'd only been around for 8 years. I feel like it's a neighborhood institution in the neighborhood I live in, and I see it on Michigan Avenue. It just speaks to how well you guys have done and marketed yourselves. Because yeah, I thought it's been there my whole life.
No, it's thank you. It really was part of the plan to really institute. You know, Chicago is rich with so much tradition, but donut and coffee shop tradition, there isn't. You know. An old one for multiple stores. There's a lot of great older donut shops that are really good. But the platform, as far as being somewhere, you know, close by, is kind of new to Chicago in my eyes.
For sure. Hey, you got a chance to win free donuts for a year. Tell us about this.
Mariano's has converted one of their coffee shops stores in Lakeview to a Stan's Donuts. And so we're doing a grand opening tomorrow. And one lucky winner can win donuts for a year.
Wow. I
just think we give it out to the first 100 people, and one person gets the donut that says you're a winner.
That's not bad. So 1 in 100. So you're going to give away 100 things, and then you might win for a year. What does that mean for a year? Because I know there's got to be some limitations. You know, you don't get 3 boxes every single day you come in, right?
No, we wouldn't do that to anybody. what we do is we price it out of our most expensive dozen, one per month for the year. And so we give you, the winner will get a gift card loaded up with that equivalent, and they could use it as they choose.
All right, so I see here in lieu of a ribbon cutting, what are you doing? Cutting a donut, it looks like. It's going to transform into a donut wonderland filled with balloon arches. Whoa, that's visually pleasing.
Well, that sounds good, yeah.
I'm just reading from the release, my friend. But yeah, you're focused on the big picture, not exactly every little detail that happens there.
Thank you.
So that's
thank you for your support.
Yes, no problem. Noon to 3 on Saturday the 29th and Sunday the 30th. Any customer at the Mariano store, and that's at 3030 North Broadway, Wellington and Broadway, just north of there. Shop there many times. You get a chance to win free donuts for a year. Not a bad deal. All right, Rich, we appreciate your time, okay?
Thank you. I appreciate it. Good talking to you.
Yeah, you too. That is Rich Labriola of Stan's Donuts. And I'm just surprised. I have passed by the one in Lakeview East. I think it's right on Broadway many, many times. And only 8 years in the grocery stores now as well. It's interesting to see how people are pivoting. There it is again. And try and find ways to reach new customers, which is important stuff.